I think the first place it came down to was the fact that we weren't growing our own food. We definitely worried about the kids in our community, but I think because we saw all this land that was being wrongly used, and so we just kept asking ourselves, why aren't we feeding ourselves?
Kukui and Gary Mauna Kea IV, a married couple of common purpose and ideals that led to the formation of the largest organic farm in Hawaii. Next on Long Story Short.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox, produced with Sony Technology, is Hawaii's first weekly television program produced and broadcast in HD. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
Aloha mai kakou, and welcome to Long Story Short. I'm Leslie Wilcox. The Waianae Coast is home to Mala Ai Opio, or Youth Organic Farm, Ma'o for short. It's the creation of Kukui and Gary Mauna Kea IV. Today, nonprofit Ma'o Organic Farms grows more than 25 types of certified organic fruits and vegetables in Waianae's Lualualei Valley, and it supplies some of Hawaii's most celebrated restaurants and natural food stores. Ma'o Farms' innovative internship program also nurtures and supports the training and college education of young adults as future farmers and leaders in the community. A love of sport and travel set in motion the union of Kukui, a native Hawaiian raised in Nanakuli, and Gary, a former banking industry employee from New Zealand. He first came to Hawaii to play rugby in the late 1980s. The couple forged a partnership to help rejuvenate the Waianae Coast community. Each partner was moved by a longtime passion for social justice.
I guess growing up, you know, New Zealand is a sort of, I guess we're an alternative lot, you know, a little bit feisty and a little bit, you know, like we like the underdog. And so as a kid growing up, you know, New Zealand went nuclear free back in, probably 30 years ago. So I grew up that as a kid. And then New Zealand plays a lot of rugby against South Africa. So during the end of the apartheid years, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of politics going on in New Zealand. So that stuff sort of sobered me, I guess, to the realities of the world. So, you know, coming to Hawaii, I didn't have, you know, I thought I was coming to paradise, yeah? and I did. I mean, it is paradise, but there's obviously a few social issues going on here that I didn't know about, and I think the rest of the world doesn't know about, yeah. And so when I got here, I started to get to 23, to 24, and I thought I'll go back to university. And so I had some friends in the rugby team here, and I ended up going back to the University of Hawaii for both undergraduate and grad school, and it was probably the best thing I ever did.
Mm-hmm. And what did you major in?
Environmental studies and political science. This is back in the early 90s. This is when people started to talk about sustainability and started to talk about the carrying capacity of Hawaii and whether tourism, things like very popular things like tourism, whether they were really having an adverse impact on Hawaii. Yeah.
Was your interest in social justice, is that what took you out to Waianae? Is that how you found your way out there?
Yeah, I think it was in grad school and I got a job working in Waianae, which was not a social activist type of job. It was like an ecotourism type of job. But I'd been going out to Waianae before that because I like to surf, and I was surfing Makaha. I got to know Eric Enos fairly well, and I went to the taro farm quite a lot. And then a couple of guys in their rugby team used to box, and Waianae's got a great boxing club. So we used to go and watch them box in Waianae.
And where did yours and Kukui's paths cross?
I was working for an organization that did, you know, community development projects. And I remember knowing her fairly well, really getting to know her through some community visioning sessions where she kind of called me out at a meeting. I remember it sort of clearly that I was part of a group that was advocating ecotourism on the Waianae Coast. I think she asked me a question like, what is this going to do for our coral reefs?
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You called him out.
I did. Many, many times.
Yeah, so it was a good question.
But definitely what we connected on were some of the things that was going on in the community at the time. And I couldn't quite wrap my mind around some of the issues. We were going through this, you know, momentous growth as a community. We were struggling a lot with, you know, youth, you know, educational attainment for youth. We were going through a lot of things, you know, around the Aina, you know, about the exploitation and sort of coming from that history of sort of anti-development on the Waianae Coast, you know, it just seemed like we had a lot in common in terms of how we were speaking about how people and place needed to be reconnected. And, you know, the experiences that he talked about early on, it sparked my imagination.
Well, Gary was growing up in New Zealand. What about your upbringing?
You know, I grew up on Hawaiian homestead land. Our growing up was wonderful. You know, we were one of the first homesteaders in Nanakuli. I think my grandmother moved there in 1931. And so, you know, many of the things that she had gone through in growing her own family and her own household was within the context of growing a brand new community. And because of her mana'o and mana as a kupuna, she was a native speaker. She was, you know, she was well acquainted with la'au lapa'au, with Hawaiian medicine, with, you know, all the practical things too of how to plant, how to harvest and cook, you know, how to really live off of the land and live with very little. And so I was able to, you know, growing up with her, I was able to capture some of that in my learnings and in the way that I develop. I think it's a very different place now, you know, from what it was before, but I think some of the elements are definitely there, that it wouldn't take that much, you know, to really reconnect the community. And I think it starts with the Aina, you know. I think that's what sort of the forces that brought us together was that idea of appreciation. And I know Gary hasn't sort of mentioned it yet, but he comes from a rural town that where farming and growing food is a wonderful occupation. And, you know, and I sort of, you know, had that similar experience of being very close to the food and close to the land. You know, as the family started to be less close-knit, the same thing happened to communities, and especially in our schools. And so our school was the same thing. I couldn't believe that in my last year there, we didn't have Hawaiian language because they would not, you know, allocate budgetary funds. And here you are with, you know, a whole school full of Native Hawaiian students and
Hawaiian homestead community.
And a Hawaiian homestead community and no Hawaiian language. And that was very hurtful, you know, having had that in my own family and with my own grandma. And, you know, if she had been alive at the time, she would have been the first to be there and going, you know, this is not pono, this is not right. And so when the opportunity came to sort of, you know, question what had happened in the Hawaiian experience, we sort of came out and started to say, hey, you know, we have to do something as community people. And, you know, I had just started having my children then, and so that was definitely, you know, it was burning, and I had a lot of questions. And right around the same time, I discovered this wonderful link that I had with some wahine at UH, you know, Mililani Trask and Haunani Trask and Lilikala Kume'elihiva. And I was lucky enough to pass right around the same time that they were organizing community around saving lo'ikalo, you know, making sure, you know, the olelo was taken care of. I mean, it was an exciting time. I think people came into my life that helped me to mold this person that's sitting here with you today, you know?
Kukui and Gary Mauna Kea IV spent more than 3 years in collaboration with friends and community members formulating the essential touchstones that would become Ma'o Organic Farms. In the face of Waianae's generational poverty, two main objectives emerged: growing food for self-sufficiency and empowering the area's at-risk youth. Both of these goals were to be achieved through the perpetuation of the Hawaiian culture.
I think the first place it came down to was the fact that we weren't growing our own food. We definitely worried about the kids in our community, but I think because we saw all this land that was being wrongly used. I mean, Lu'ulua Lane Naval Base, 7,500 acres is still used by the military, and the base is really closed. And so we just kept asking ourselves, why aren't we feeding ourselves? And then we dug a little bit deeper, and one of our friends is a soil scientist, and it turns out that the soil in Lulule Valley is one of the most unique and nutrient-rich soils in the world. And we didn't know that, and kids in our community weren't taught that. And they'd been taught that, you know, Makaha is a great beach and we have beautiful oceans and we should be proud of our water and we should be proud of our culture and heritage. But the connection to the land had been severed. And we still, to this day, there's kids that come up to the farm that have never been up into the valleys. Now, that's because some of the valleys are off limits. And so I think that's where it started. And then, you know, definitely as our kids started to get a little bit older and go through the same problems that other kids were going through, our connection to what kids in Waianae and what kids in rural Hawaii are going through started to just, you know, really, really sort of slap us in the face. You know, the idea that a good public education is very difficult to get in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. So, is that where you thought about fusing the two needs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we looked at the community and Kukui at the time in 1990 was working for the census, and then in 2000 she worked for the census after 10 years. And you can tell that story better, but I remember her coming home and going like, wow, things have got definitely worse in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And telling stories like, you know, a family in a cul-de-sac all sharing the same power with extension cords going from house to house.
Mm-hmm. That's right, you go door to door and you really see people and look at how they live. What were the differences?
And they were friends that I had grown up with. They were very poor, but you would never have known that. And they were super smart. And I believe that one of them went on and got a master's degree. But they were very poor. And then to see the next generation so disconnected, and then, you know, poorer than poor. The porch leading up to where the doorway was when in the old home had been demolished. And they were basically just using like a little step stool to climb up into the house. And then no ice box. They had coolers all outside full of food, and the children were going in there to go get their food. And just dozens of electrical cords coming from, you know, from another neighbor's home, and I guess for emergency or whatever. And still till today, you know, we see people living in garages, multiple families, you know, being told to leave, told to come. You know, it's just crazy, I don't know.
Kukui and Gary Mauna Kea IV talked with young people about the aina and its importance culturally, historically, spiritually. The couple drew upon the assistance of elders, such as Uncle William Aila Sr. and other community collaborators to help run the Ma'o Organic Farms.
We didn't want to just grow food and eat it ourselves. We wanted it to be highly marketable because, you know, when we analyzed our community, the state of poverty was multi-generational. And we thought that if we sell our own food for a premium price, that money would go back to our community. And so we looked at the kind of social service kinds of things that we had been doing ourselves and that others were doing, and we wanted to add this, what at the time was called community-based economic development, but we wanted to add this economic development layer that now has become social enterprise. And so that's where it started, and we were fortunate to get a lease from the Community of Christ Church for 5 acres kind of almost immediately as we started. And you know, we wrote a business plan, and we got friends and family together, and we got a board of directors. And I think the product of 3 years of talking and researching and having meetings was the first two grants that we received were, well, the first, we got a local grant from the Bank of Hawaii, and then the first two large grants were federal grants, and we got them very quickly.
You know, there's no one right way, and we've all sort of figured out this thing that we bring everything to the table, you put it down, if your idea is better than ours, then hey, we're gonna go with your idea. And that's how it even happened with that very first class. And you know, I wanted it to be this great education program, I wanted, you know, this element of culture and you know, this element of vocational skills being taught and this element of community work being done, and it just didn't happen like that. It was whatever, you know, resources and people that were sort of there at the time. And it started off as a 10-month long experience, you know, farm work experience.
So who were your first enrollees?
Mostly people that we had talked to their parents at Tamura's or we saw down at the beach park and said, hey, we're starting a program. Would you guys like to, you know, send your daughter? Oh yeah, my daughter's graduating and she doesn't really have plans. Sure, we'll sign her up. Those people that were meant to be there ended up there. And, you know, all of us, you know, growing up on the coast, the fact that there's only, you know, 11% that will go to college, that's a small number. So what about the other 88-90% that aren't going to college? Where are those guys? And you know, we thought long and hard about who we wanted to have this opportunity and to have this experience. And it was really those that were going to become the leaders. So this 18-to-24-year-old Waianae or Nanakuli graduate that had a desire to do something different and to connect with not only the culture, but with a future in the community.
Almost every young person that has been in touch with Ma'o, and this is pretty much the condition of the Waianae Coast, you know, the federal government calls them at risk. And if you look deep at the statistics, you'll find that, you know, Waianae has twice the teen pregnancy rate, twice the substance abuse rate. All of these indicators are terrible. Twice as bad as anywhere else. And so most of the kids that come have issues at home or within their own lives that they've got to deal with. On top of that, you know, we're told in this society that if you go and get a college education, you can get ahead in life, you know, you can get your American dream. Most of the kids coming out of the school, public schools in the state of Hawaii and in Waianae are what's termed remedial. So in the first year of college, they generally can't take 100 level classes. So what it does is add a whole year to their college experience. And so they have to pay for that college. They have to somehow find the resources to get through college. And so they have to be highly motivated. Because when we started Ma'o, we wanted to start it with a college program, an associate degree program. That took us 3 or 4 years to gain momentum, because when we went to Leeward Community College initially, they were like, well, you know, let's do a non-credit program. And so we started with this 10-month long program. Mm-hmm. And now the various programs we have through Ma'o are sort of designed to be like a movement, to have this environment of entrepreneurship, of I want to get ahead, of I want to work hard, I want to give to my community.
Over time, you know, we nurture trust and respect and love. And, you know, for Kainoa, who came into the program, he was a wonderful digital media specialist. And so straight out of high school from Sea Rider Productions, he was, you know, sent out into the world to unleash himself onto the college scene. And he didn't do that well. And because Uncle William worked at the farm, he said, well, you know, Kainoa's not doing anything. Why don't you come and then be a part of this college program? You still want to go to college, right, Kainoa? And yeah, Papa, I do. And so he did. And over the time that he was at the farm, you know, he learned along with his peers, not only how to handle college, but also how to manage work and family life, because he still lived at home. And then he went through this physical transformation, you know, about a year ago. He really started to appreciate the stuff that he was learning on the farm. And so he would take home food, you know, to cook at home. And then on Sundays, you know, when it's, you know, everybody else is sleeping or having fun, you know, he and another boy would come to the farm and help water the farm for Uncle William. And because we have wireless access, they would do their homework out on the picnic table outside of the offices. They would cook for themselves. They would go harvest some food, cook, and I think over the last year he lost about 140 pounds. He'll be graduating next semester, and his plan is to go to UH and get his 4-year degree. So very proud of him.
Well, the cool thing is we've got a ton of these stories, and we've got the stories of the kids that are are still in the program or have graduated, but also the kids have left early. There's a lot of kids who leave early. Mainly it's because they find that the farming is not part of what they want to do, because the farmer's set up, the work is 4 days a week, 3 to 4 days a week, and it's tough, and you go to college. And when kids first come to the farm, they generally come because we're going to help them pay for college and give them a stipend. The farming, they could live without some of them. And that's part of the stereotype of working on a farm in Hawaii and in the US that we had to deal with. So in 2003, I think, was our first real official 10-person youth leadership training. And these young people were just straight out of college. And one of them went through the whole 10 months. And during that 10 months, he turned 18. And he was, you know, he was all over the place. He would argue with the young woman. He was just growing up. And he graduated, and he did what a lot of young guys in Waianae, when they have family resources, he went to work for his uncle. And that's what happens a lot. You know, I'm going to work for my uncle, who's a contractor, and he was going to go get a plumbing apprenticeship. And anyway, it fell through. And so he came back, and he came back up to the farm, and he said, you know, Uncle Gary, I know the farm's growing. Can you give me a job? And I said, okay, I'll give you a job if you make your salary. We've got to make more money, and that's what you're going to get paid. And anyway, he stuck at it, and now he's still with us, and he's 25 years old, and he's now the assistant farm manager. His name's Manny. He represents what we believe is the untapped potential of young men in Waianae. He can run the farm himself. I've seen him talk story with Alan Wong about food, talk story with Ed Kenny about food. At one of the fundraisers, he was talking about the farm to Pierre Omidia, who's a billionaire. He represents, I believe, what a young farmer in the state of Hawaii should be. Not just a person who's able to toil in the fields, but he can talk about the vegetables, he can cook the vegetables. He can inspire other young people to want to do the job he's doing.
Well, farming has become remarkably complex. You've got to be a weather person and a scientist and, I mean, they're a marketer. It's a very tough way to make a living.
Well, I think, you know, we've tried to take the farming part of it and make it sexy and to make it interesting. And the best and easiest way to do that is to allow the young people to do, firstly, a bit of everything. So they get typecast weeding a lot, but they also get to do all the other jobs, and you know, packing vegetables to go to town restaurant or to go to Whole Foods is one of those things where they start to see the pride in doing it.
And the connections.
And the connection, yeah. And so if they're at KCC Farmers Market selling vegetables, that's the ultimate job. You know, we are hoping now that the next step for us is that these, especially some of the young people who really have all of a sudden like farming, we'll be farmers. And we'll either farm larger spaces with us or go off on them by themselves. And Manny and his now wife, Summer, they're talking about buying a piece of property. They've saved for a deposit for to buy a house.
I think that's what I love most about what we do, is that we're providing this way for young people at an early age to build equity. You know, and it's not just equity, financial equity, but it's also equity in terms of the relationships that we're creating with other people in our community and with the land that feeds them. So, you know, it's so nice.
Despite the ongoing success of Ma'o Organic Farms, there are still many challenges for the Waianae community, particularly for its young people. But for those who work the land, the farms give them a chance to work through their frustrations.
I get angry every single day at the farm when we're sitting on, you know, we had 5 acres, now we have 11 more, and I look south and I see Lulele Naval Base with antennas everywhere. And it was tough to be angry at that, you know, 8 or 9 years ago when the base was operating, but now it's closed. We drive past 7,500 acres of land. And we have everyday normal people saying, why aren't we feeding ourselves? What makes it even more ridiculous is we drive past the beach parks and we see family, friends, kids, you know, in the farm, their families and friends, our families and friends, homeless.
Young people are coming from those places where there is a lot of injustice being felt. you know, whether it's dad losing a job because he's too low or he didn't have the right educational attainment, or that, you know, sister is going to be kicked off of welfare because she no longer qualifies, or I got to go, you know, continue to go work three jobs just to keep the lights on. I mean, those things, we know that our youth are going through that. We know too that some of them are the only wage earners in their homes right now. They're going to school to make sure that they have some sort of future to get a better job, but at the same time, they're at a very, you know, low wage sort of job. And so sometimes those issues all sort of bubble up and they come to the surface. And I think Ma'o provides that wonderful opportunity to help them deal with it so that it doesn't become anger, so that there's some constructive way to talk about how that happened to that, to their family, to themselves. We give them an opportunity and a way to sort of come to terms with that anger. And we've been lucky enough to work through a lot of those issues and understand that it's so complex that we really do need to build those times in our families, build that capacity in our youth and in ourselves to take care of that.
In 2009, after almost a decade of hard work, Ma'o Organic Farms is busy expanding its acreage and its packing facilities. Kukui and Gary Mauna Kea Forth's social enterprise is not only enriching the lives of young people, it's setting a standard for sustainability in Hawaii's future. Thank you for joining us. For Long Story Short and PBS Hawaii, I'm Leslie Wilcox. Until next time, aloha a hui hou kākou.
Long Story Short with Leslie Wilcox is produced in HD by PBS Hawaii with Sony Technology. High definition, it's in Sony's DNA.
I think that rootedness is the first step for the kids to really understand, for the young adults to really understand where they situate themselves in the world. You know, we call it the context they come with, yeah.
We're still learning about what is the best way to convey that and to teach that and to make our youth and our community comfortable with the images that both they perceive themselves as having or being and what outside of Waianae is looking in and seeing. That confidence or acceptance of who you are and being okay with that, you know, is really critical for youth to develop well. And, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of creating time and space for them to be able to discuss that very question and taking us out of the decision making and putting them into the place where they decide and empower them to have that conversation.